Hey, y'all.
What's up?
Welcome to the Entangled Podcast. My name is Ashley.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Henry. We are three educators from Teach for America that get together on this podcast to talk about education in Louisiana and all the subjects entangled within it. See what I did there?
In each episode, we unpack the latest news of Louisiana state of education, discuss the hottest topics in the field, and make sense of it all with a touch of humor.
Thank you for tuning into this episode, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Well, hello. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening to everybody who is listening. I am Henry. I am here with my lovely co-host Ashley and Taylor. Hello to you all. How y'all doing today?
Hey, hey. Welcome back to the podcast.
What up, y'all? What's popping?
No, Taylor, I thought you were going to say welcome back to the party, or because I heard you say pop. So I was like, oh, snap, it's a party.
Welcome back to the party and the shenanigans.
Yes, the shenanigans of the Entangled podcast. So now that it's November and we are making our steady way to December, we're starting to feel some of the cold weather. How do we feel about that?
It's cold outside. I'm kidding.
Is that good or bad?
It's not cold outside.
Not too bad.
It is bad for me.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Well, as a native Detroiter, this is fall, spring weather in my eyes. So, You know, I still got on my little biker shorts, my little ankle's still out. Might still wear a sandal here and there, you know.
Wow.
But by February, when I need a hat, that's all out the window. But now it's kind of cute. You're still getting sunshine. No rain recently, knock on wood. So Yeah, it's really nice. What about you, Henry?
Well, see, for me, I'm a Cali kid. So I am not a big fan of like extreme cold weather. And I know that, you know, 50 degrees is not extreme for some people, like Michigan people, but I am very much used to the 70s weather. That's my home base. That's Cali for you. But I will say, I feel like I am adapting rather quickly. That's usually the case. The first two, three days, I should say, it sucks. You know, it's like, oh man, it's freezing outside. My girlfriend makes fun of me. She's from Connecticut. And so she's like, this is cold to you.
Right.
And yeah. And then, you know, come 3 days later, I'm all right. And then I start poking fun at her whenever she shivers. So I'm like, oh, I thought you were from Connecticut.
I am dead. The problem is right now it is in the in-between. So it's like super cold in the morning.
Yeah.
Warmer throughout the day, which requires you to wear layers, which is fine. But in my house, I don't have obviously the air on because it's too cold for that. But I don't have the heat on either because it's not cold enough. And So right now I have on long sleeves and shorts because I'm just like, it was cold when I woke up, but it's going to warm up. So what do I do? My existential crisis for today.
Child, I know we're about to get started with current events, but I think I got to the point last week when I was like, because you know, when you're younger, your parents are like, don't touch my thermostat. Well, that has been ingrained in my spirit since I was younger. But then last week, I was so cold in my house that I was like, girl, you pay this bill. You want to turn this heat on, I know. So I had that moment where I was like, okay, I could turn it off for a little bit just to knock the chill off.
Yeah.
And then we're going to turn it right back down.
Yeah, maybe I should do that.
You got to tell yourself, this is my house. This is my house.
Love you, Ma. I know you're going to listen to this. I love you, Mom.
Love you, Mom.
Oh, man. All right. Y'all ready to jump into some current events? Okay, cool. Well, so according to The Advocate, quality classroom materials in Louisiana public schools are on the decline. So there was a once upon a time, Louisiana had been winning national or getting national praise for its use of top flight textbooks and other materials in their public schools. But that pattern has dropped over the past 2 years. RAND Corporation conducted a review and basically saw that between the English and the math materials, the decline was there. So only 33% of teachers nationally used fully aligned materials in 2021. So Louisiana was a lone state amongst other states that had a sharp decline. So they rated it against Texas, Arkansas, and Tennessee. And Jenna Chason, who is the assistant superintendent in the state office of teaching and learning, said that she doesn't believe that the issues cited in the report contribute to the wholesale drop in math and English. But she does think that the drop in scores comes from the loss of instruction, the coronavirus pandemic, not because there was a decline in teaching materials. So she feels as though the materials are good, but the pandemic is the reason. So they're thinking about trying to figure out how we're going to make this a statewide mandated curriculum. And of course, some educators are like, no, because people like to do what's best for their kids. So interesting take there, but also keeping in mind curriculum is linked to grants and other accolades and financial incentives for different schools. So,
So here's where I'm like tilting my head. This person, Ms. Chason, is saying the results are not because of the curriculum, but more or less they're because of the pandemic and stuff. And I'm like, well, didn't everybody else also go through a pandemic?
Yep. And she's like, so she also did mention that teachers sometimes resorted to non-traditional materials out of necessity, but then also is still saying like those materials were still quality. So that's her argument. And that's what she's, what she feels to be true. So, but yeah, everybody else did go through a pandemic. So it's like,
well, and I think my wondering is, so what designates a quality curriculum? And I know the schools that we serve, because they are Title I schools and low, quote unquote, low performing schools, they are required to use tier one curricula that is designated by the state.
Yep.
And they have curricular options that are tier one curriculum that they have to use. And superintendents go into classrooms looking for the implementation of that curriculum. So are they off? I'm trying to figure out how to say this in a way that is not, but if the curriculum that you're providing and offering and incentivizing schools to use, maybe we need to reconsider what we consider as
quote unquote good curriculum.
Yeah.
Correct. Because I've seen some of the curriculum in action and it ain't quote unquote good curriculum, in my opinion.
Yeah, I get that. And also the article also stated that there aren't any like consequences for failing to not use the curriculum that the state is mandating. And so like, if there's no form of like checks and balances, then how can, I mean, to Jenna's point, like there are also aren't able to track and see, you know, where the breakdown lies. So
yeah, I would just really appreciate the consideration of multiple things causing an issue as opposed to trying to pinpoint the one thing. Because you could have a good curriculum that is not implemented well because teachers don't know how to implement it. That doesn't mean it's the curriculum's fault.
Also, in similar news, this is hot off the press, y'all. I was kind of, when I was reading this article, I was like, this is a little messy, but you know, it's interesting and it's about education. So we're going to talk about it. So the article is entitled, "After $342K in contracts goes to past school officials, critics say it wasn't a normal procedure." So long story short, there were two consulting firms that basically started up business maybe about 2 weeks prior to the state signing a contract with them. Now there are critics coming out and saying that this is basically not how the procedure should have taken place. And it's quite a bit of money. We're talking about $342,000. And so, not to mention the fact that one of the consulting, one of the consulting firms is also a previous employee of the East Baton Rouge school system. So won't leave names there. I will let you all go forth and read the article. However, I do think that when I think about the state superintendent, when I think about the Louisiana Board of Education, it's important to understand where the money goes. Whether or not this is, you know, this was the right thing to do, I don't think that it is personally my place to say. However, I think it speaks to a larger issue in education of, like, you know, folks misusing funds. Not saying that that's what's happening in this situation, but it has happened in education. So just food for thought. And yeah, go ahead and read the article if you're interested.
It sounds weird of, like, oh, you're going to give money to a consulting firm that opened literally yesterday. I missed my moment. Missed my time to shine.
Come on. EGA consulting.
Could have paid off your house.
Mm-hmm. And a couple other things. But see, I'm not trying to be scamming. So,
you know,
I'm trying to stay in the good graces of the people and the Lord upstairs.
And you are. And, like, I don't think that this article is, like, completely negative. I think it just shines light on, you know, if you're going to, because also there's a lot of people that are saying, I'm going to quit my job and people are going to pay me accordingly for my knowledge. And I'm all for that. Like, if you got the knowledge and you know what you're doing, so be it. It's just like with all of these new consulting firms coming up, like, what does that look like at the state level, at the school level, for folks to be able to trust the knowledge that you have and your ability to do right by the students in Louisiana?
I'm just going to say this. If I ever start a consulting firm and my first client is a state and I score 300K from this first contract I made, I mean, wow, luck is on my side. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that. Luck is on my side.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
That's all I have for current events this week, y'all.
Lord,
fantastic.
Have mercy. Be
offended. Fantastic.
Be offended.
Way to kick us off, Ashley.
You know, right. just sort of put it out there. You
kick
know,
us off with a mess.
I was gonna find a more, you know, positive our article, and then I was like, well, the topic that we're talking about was gonna be my redeeming subject, but we're gonna just let the episode be the shine, be the sugar to this saltiness and sweetness, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, because today's episode is circling back to the current events from the last episode, where I mentioned that Louisiana is churning out maybe 100 teachers, new teachers, and we need like 1,000. Mm-hmm. And Henry edited in that amazing gasp, which was chef's kiss. And I wanted to go down that road a little bit more because we've experienced a lot in this pandemic last year. And newsflash, if you did not know, we're still in the pandemic like today. I know, shocker, sorry. A lot of industries have been impacted by the pandemic and people resigning. And Stevie brought this up, the Great Recession. So I figured we could have
resignation.
Resignation. The great. I mean, we in a recession too, so whatever. All the R's, we there.
Because inflation is here. Okay, it is here.
Y'all seeing gas prices?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Circle it back. Resignation. And I wanted to do some research around what resignation looked like whole scale across industries and which industries were actually leading in the most people leaving, and then tie it back to the resignations in the country dealing with education, and then getting more micro with education in Louisiana and our teacher shortages. So obviously, feel free to chime in. I've done a lot of research. I'm going to try to remember or name the names of the articles, and we will obviously add them in our notes so you can go back and read them. So we're going to start with a big hitter from the Harvard Business Review, because that's who we are now, y'all. We citing Harvard up in this thing.
Come on, got the big dogs.
We got the big dogs. And this article is called "Who is Driving the Great Resignation" by Ian Cook. And so in this article, they talk a little bit about like when resignations peaked. So they peaked in April of this year. They have been abnormally high for the past several months, with a record-breaking 10.9 million open jobs at the end of July.
Wow.
Almost 11 million job openings by the end of the summer.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that 4 million people quit their jobs in July 2021. And I thought this was interesting. So one of the points is resignation rates are highest among mid-career employees. So employees between 30 and 45 years old have had the greatest increase in resignation rates, with an average increase of more than 20% between 2020 and 2021. The study also found that resignations actually decreased for workers in the 20 to 25 age range, likely due to what? Why do you think that people in our age range potentially are less likely to resign?
What I'm finding interesting about this is that I thought the resignation was coming across industries, right? Not just in teaching, but I thought it was coming because of the vaccine mandate. So to hear you say that it really started back in April means that it's not, it was happening long before the vaccine was mandatory, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
This particular great resignation is speaking more about the mass exodus of people due to the pandemic and not vaccine related specifically. But I am very interested because employees between 30 and 45 have had the greatest increase of resignation rates, whereas workers in the 20 to 25 age range, which actually is not me, I am not 25 anymore, have decreased. And what are some of your... what is a hypothesis as to why 20 and 25 year olds are actually not resigning from their jobs?
I think it's stability, honestly. Like when I first graduated from college and I got my first job, I was like, oh, I have to keep this job because I need to pay my bills. And like, by the time you're 30, not to say, you know, because I still don't have all my stuff together, but like when you're in your 30s, you kind of have more of an idea. You plan your, it's a calculated resignation. It's not like, I'm just going to up and willingly do it. Maybe a 20 to 25 year old would.
Yeah. And you're also most likely, more likely, I should say, to have savings, a savings account with money in it that will allow you to have some buffer between the time you resign to finding a new job.
Yeah, that is exactly it. So due to a combination of their greater financial uncertainty, and this is this second point, I don't think I agree with, but reduced demand for entry-level workers. So it sounds like, now that I actually read it out loud, I do agree. So like companies are reducing how much they need entry-level workers, so they're less likely to hire people in that age range. And 20 to 25 year olds, because they are fresh out of college, this might be their first professional role outside of college, they are experiencing greater financial uncertainty. So as we move forward, that was like the most important first point, is people in between the ages of 30 and 45 are leading the way for this mass exodus. Now, before we move on to point two, I want y'all to guess. Think of all the industries that exist or that you're familiar with. What industry do you think is leading the way with the most resignations? And don't cheat and look at my article.
No, I would guess service.
So like the service and hospitality industry?
Okay. Yeah.
I can't give you an answer because I pulled up the article. So, but if I were to think and not know the answer already, I would say service too, like essential workers, because they were the folks out there on the front lines, you know, bagging our groceries, putting our stocking our food, things like that.
Yeah. I've also seen the airline industry has been experiencing a huge resignation too, right? So maybe them.
Okay. So resignations, point two, according to Harvard Business Review, resignations are highest in the tech and healthcare industries.
Wow. I could totally see the health one for sure.
Same. Mm-hmm. But the tech one, I was really expecting to see education up there and was really shocked when I didn't. But I'm going to read this little blurb and maybe it will tell us a little bit more information. So they have identified dramatic differences in turnover rates between companies and different industries, with which we were talking about. So resignations actually decreased slightly in industries such as manufacturing and finance. 3.6% more healthcare employees quit their job than in the previous year. And tech resignations increased by 4.5%. And they found that the rates were higher among employees who worked in fields that had experienced extreme increases in demand due to the pandemic, likely leading to increased workloads and burnout. So it doesn't give a reason for these resignations. This article is really about supporting industries in improving their retention. And so it like gives some tips on how to do that. And honestly, like these all relate to teaching. So we'll come back to these. But I am very interested to understand more of like, why are people leaving the tech industry? Because they are probably some of the highest paid of the industries. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, they are some of the ones who were the least impacted by the pandemic in regards to their work. Mm-hmm. Healthcare workers, I think we can all understand.
Yeah. Right.
People started understanding like, I can't keep putting my life on the line for this. I am too stressed. I am experiencing mental health difficulties. I cannot be isolated from my family this long of time. Yeah. This is stressful. Yeah. I can understand that.
So right. That there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. Like this is, I can't keep doing this. I get that. Yeah.
Right. And it's very traumatic to go to work every day and experience so much death and mortality. And it has you rethinking your whole life, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So they're like, bye.
Peace out.
Right. So now we're going to go and switch to the school system. And there is an article from Quartz.com, and it's called American Schools Are at Risk of Their Own Great Resignation. So my understanding of reading that title is people were not expecting the education field to really take a hit, because teaching has always been one of the professions that has been there that you can go to if you needed a job, which, you know, is probably related to some of the issues that we're having. But this particular article is saying that when classes resumed in the fall, obviously teachers faced a whole host of new challenges that they've never faced before. And so they found that during the pandemic, teachers became less certain that they would work in a classroom until retirement. In March 2022, so the very beginning of the pandemic, I'm fast forwarding, my bad.
2020, it's okay.
Whatever. Reading is fundamental. I should know. We've had two episodes on it. And yet, reading is still an area of growth for me.
It's okay.
It's fine. So
it's fine.
I'll restate. In March of 2020, 74% of teachers said they expected to work until they retired. But then that figure fell to 69% a year later in 2021. So teachers, when answering surveys and they're being asked, hey, are you planning on teaching until you retire? A large majority of teachers are saying, girl, I don't know, which has never really happened before.
Yeah.
Because teachers are like, yeah, I'm going to teach until I can collect my retirement and I'm going to go sit down somewhere. And now people are like, it's a no for me.
This is one that's, I mean, because we're in the field, I feel like this one's very understandable, right?
Definitely.
The demand for the work is, without a pandemic, was already a lot as it was. And one of those things that I think schools just historically have done, and I think it's gotten progressively more intense over time, is that they really do bank on a teacher's passion for working with kids mm-hmm. to up the demand of the work, right? Yeah. And so then you add the pandemic to it and you start adding like safety precautions and concerns and protocols and new responsibilities. Oof, tough, too tough to commit to.
Yeah. And I think that this is interesting coupled with the research that you presented earlier is like, because one thing I thought about was like, folks are leaving the tech industry because it's like, no matter how much you get paid, folks still want to be happy in their jobs, right? Like, not, I don't want to say money can't buy you everything, but when I think about tech, I think about that being potentially maybe like, I mean, Google is probably in and out, like out there because they feed their employees, all that types of stuff. But like folks who are maybe in these tech startups may not have the same camaraderie or team culture that, let's say, a school has. But like right now, even tech and healthcare, they saw a pay increase over the pandemic. Like nurses were making bank. Mm-hmm. Tech has always been that type of field. But what teachers got, what, their three stimulus checks?
Oh, hold on, you know, to that. Hold on. Oh. Let's stick a pin in that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, we're actually going to circle back to that of like how money doesn't actually solve all the problems that mm-hmm. we think it's going to solve. So we're going to get to that in in another article. So remember that, put it in your brain and save it. We are going to zoom back in to Louisiana education. And so now this is where we at. This is what we're experiencing. This is what we're seeing. And I don't know if y'all know this, and I'm going to preface this. My manager also knows this. I spend a lot of time on Indeed, mainly because I am nosy.
All right.
Because I like to see what is out there, exactly like how many teaching positions are open and what schools have openings. Because I'm going to go back in the classroom, just because I'm curious to see how many positions are actually open. Newsflash, it's a lot.
Yeah.
There's multiple. If you go on, even for Baton Rouge, and you go on Indeed and you literally type in education as the topic and Baton Rouge as the city and click search, multiple positions that are school-based are listed on literally every single page.
Yep.
And so it's something that I see and I get anxious about. So I close out of Indeed and I'm like, okay, that's enough.
Wait, and these education positions, are they all teaching positions or are they different roles?
They're teachers or like a paraprofessional, never really an AP or principal role. Those are far and few in between, but they are mostly teacher positions, like science teacher at this school, social studies teacher at that school, pre-K teacher at local elementary school.
Okay. So it's those classroom positions that are vacant.
Correct. And so here is another article from USA News, Louisiana facing worsening shortages of classroom teachers. And this says, as we mentioned in the last episode and have been talking about over time, is that the teacher shortage is worsening and with rising retirements and declining ranks of new teachers in districts around the state. So there's a high level of people retiring from teaching, and then there's a low level of new teachers coming in to replace the people who have retired. So the Advocate reports that the ranks of students in the LSU School of Education plunged 57% in the past decade and 39% in the past 5 years.
Damn! Teaching is not sexy. You know, it's not a I'm gonna put a bow on it profession for a lot of people. And not to mention that, and I'm thinking this is top of mind for me because I work so closely with folks who are trying to get certified and things like that. Certification is not a requirement in Louisiana. So you could say, I want to teach, but then get a degree in something else and still come and teach in different areas with no license. But anyway, I think
it's related because it's also mentioned in the article about how 23% of teachers are either uncertified or teaching outside of their field of expertise, which is why like we push so hard for our teachers to be certified. Not to say that, you know, certification is the end all be all, and not to say truly that certification makes you fundamentally a better teacher.
Yeah.
And we know that our students, Black and Brown students and low income students, are more likely to have teachers who are uncertified and or inexperienced. So with the high level of people retiring and the low level of people coming in, that means our students are less likely to have a teacher who is knowledgeable and not new, which does impact student performance and student success. We understand that Louisiana's teacher shortage is rough because people are retiring and there are not enough people coming back into the field to replace those teachers. So I think we should talk a little bit about the impact of that on kids and what that means for kids experiencing so much change that is happening with their teachers.
Well, we'll turn it over to you again too, because I know you're also in the classrooms, but as someone who is visiting classrooms, let me tell you that it has not been good. It has not been good. The amount of change that students are constantly experiencing, it really is adding to like the emotional instability of students. We're seeing that in the lower grades. We're seeing that in the upper grades.
Yeah.
It is, it's getting pretty bad. We're even having to, like, as a coach, I'm really having to like tune into my inner Elena Aguilar and really be like, okay, emotions, let's talk about them. Because it is, as we talk, you know, we've talked a lot about how important consistency is for child development. And so there are some students who don't have that consistency at home. And so where do they get the consistency? At school. Now take that away too, and you start to get instability, you know, a lot of emotional instability. And so, yeah, I think I'll just pass it on over. You, Taylor, I correct me if I'm wrong, but you are seeing this in the lower grades, right? Like, cause I'm seeing it more in the upper grades than I am in the lower grades. And even the upper grade students, middle school and high school are like, especially middle school, are really, they're just not doing too well with the amount of changes that we're having.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Kids are struggling everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I meant to name, like, kids are being impacted. Yes, and that's our first priority. And the other teachers that are still in the building are also being impacted because they are being asked to stretch themselves and to be a team player and to fill in the gaps where people are missing. And so that has resulted in like condensing a whole grade level and like essentially splitting up kids among the remaining teachers, which increases class sizes, which for a new teacher is hard to handle. I was talking to someone else who doesn't teach in Louisiana, but they were saying how their school pays them like $50 to cover another teacher's class, like an absent teacher's class during their planning time. And so like schools and districts are resorting to extreme measures because there's just not enough bodies to teach.
Yeah, yeah, yo, I am seeing it too. And I'm also seeing it like very recently too. There is a school that I'm working with that is experiencing a great resignation. Several teachers have left, and now they're resorting to combining classes. Some of our core members are going to be teaching together, and they teach two different subjects and two different grade levels, and they're about to combine some of these classes. And some of them, I know, don't have the strongest management skills just yet.
Yeah.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
But we're about to combine their classes, and I'm like, Oh my God, y'all, put your seatbelts on because it is gonna get bumpy.
It is. Oh my God. And with teachers, there being a teacher shortage, there's also a substitute shortage. Right. Ain't nobody trying to come up into no school to be no sub.
Nope. Because then it's going to be long term real quick. You're going to be a full year. Like,
you're going to be a full-time teacher on sub pay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Who wants to do that?
Yeah.
Who said that?
Well, plus, like, I mean, if you've ever subbed a class before, you know how, or if you've taught, you know how kids are when there's a sub in the room. Oh, free day. Yeah.
We about to turn up.
Yo, the rules go out the window. It's hard being a sub.
And now there's no note to leave for the teacher.
Nope.
Because ain't no teacher.
Ain't not one. Not a one.
So that brings me into this article that was written right when I think Miguel Cardona was a nomination for the Ed Secretary. So this is from theconversation.com. And they were talking about how Mr. Cardona has a lot of urgent priorities regarding like reopening school safely, addressing systemic racism within school, reversing the ever-growing teacher shortage. So four experts explain how to recruit more people to become educators in the nation's public. And I would love to hear your thoughts. So, one, what do you think number one is?
Join TFA.
No. Wrong answer.
Print some mo.
Give them some more money. Number one is increase pay and reduce class size. So this is from Bob. This is Bob Spire's recommendation, who was an associate professor of education at the University of Richmond. Mm. Obviously, he talks about like the teacher shortage. And part of the reason for the shortage has to do with pay and working conditions. On average, teachers make roughly 20% less than other college graduates, according to the research from the Economic Policy Institute.
And here's the thing, look, that's not a secret, right? That's what's funny to me. It's not a secret, but the thing, I'm sorry, you probably weren't even done yet, so I apologize if I interrupted, but I'm starting to feel like I don't feel satisfied with the idea of like, you know, give them a raise. Because to me, that always ends up being like, give them an extra $1,000, give them an extra $2,000. You know, I really would like to restructure the profession itself in terms of like the prestige of it and what the income actually deserves, you know, what the profession income should be. Just given, yes, I know like there are days off and we have more days off than the average profession, but I think in terms of hours, they're probably about the same. They're probably about the same if we're talking about hours in a year. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I feel like I had to chime in there because I was like, you know, this idea of the give them a pay raise. Like, no, dude, just let's like completely rethink what a teacher deserves to make. Don't give us an extra $1,000.
Yeah. To supplement, majority of teachers work additional jobs within or outside of their school. So the other component of that is class sizes. And this piece, I think, is really helpful. This is something that I feel like we know as educators, but something that I very rarely see written. So class sizes continue to grow, which teacher unions say negatively affects teachers and students. Peer-reviewed research bears out that smaller class sizes are academically, socially, and economically beneficial, especially to low-income and minority students. So he gives a little bit more to like, he believes educational leaders and policymakers must take proactive steps at the local, the state, and the federal levels to increase pay in a way that makes sense, Henry, not just like, here's an extra couple of dollars. And how thinking about how to reduce class sizes as well. Number two is improve morale and recruit diverse teachers. This is from Doris Santoro, who is a professor of education at Boyden College. So she says that teachers' work has been filled with anxiety and uncertainty, and there's ways to find meaning and value as educators have been upended through necessary safety measures that have radically altered their work. She did also say that there's no more romantic before times for most public schools because COVID has thrown a wrench in all of that. And people are trying to go back to before when there is no before at this point. So morale and increase the number of diversity in teachers that are coming through the schools.
Did they say how do they go about lifting the morale besides, I don't know, reducing class sizes?
No, she didn't say specifically what could be done. I think honestly, just acknowledging the teacher turnover, the high teacher turnover, and just showing appreciation to the people who are in the building. Like, it really does not take that much.
Nope.
Well, all right.
Yeah. And then the last one is bring back joy. So Diane B. Hirschberg, who is the professor of education policy at the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska, Anchorage.
Yeah, that's a mouthful.
Right. These efforts, so they're focusing, there's a high focus on standardized testing. So these efforts have led teachers to use lessons that are narrow and often scripted and that focus mostly on core subjects. For many teachers, this has taken joy out of what they do.
Damn. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
That one hits. That one hits hard.
When in actuality, students are, they come to us very well-rounded, not just thinking about math and English and social studies. They're thinking about the entire world. So how are you teaching to the whole child?
Yep.
And I want to read this little piece because I think it's important, not that anything else I said hasn't been. Given teachers a canned curriculum and requiring them to follow a schedule and materials developed by people from a different state or by a big publishing house can often leave teachers feeling as if their own expertise is not recognized or valued. It takes the creativity out of teaching and connecting with students and diminishes the gratification that comes from seeing their efforts and expertise transform the lives of their students. Did I write that? I feel like I wrote that.
Yo, but you know, it's funny. I can very much relate to that. So I also remember trying to plan certain activities that would bring joy to the classroom, make learning the material a little more interesting, and I would get reprimanded for it. I even remember once, like, we were doing this grammar exercise. It was about, I think, adverbs and adjectives. So I found a worksheet that was very easy to comprehend, very easy to grasp as long as you're paying attention. And I modeled it, we walked through it, and the kids mastered it. I mean, they did well. I felt confident. They all felt confident. We were feeling good. And for my debrief, I remember the thing they asked me was like, where did you get that sheet from? I was like, the internet, you know, I found it somewhere online. But the objective, you know, for them to be able to, you know, understand the difference between the two and use them in a sentence, use them in a paragraph was still meant. It's like, yeah, but it just, I don't know if it was rigorous enough. And we got to really stick to the curriculum that we gave you. And I'm like, man, God forbid they get it, right? God forbid they get it. So sure enough, you know, we used the curriculum and it didn't take long before I lost them.
There are obviously a lot of moving parts to this. And something that I am thinking about is in my role is how can I support schools and school leaders to manifest this joy? I felt a lot of joy at the school that I worked with. And I'm circling back to what Ashley named about pay and what you named as well, Henry. There was also another article that I didn't name that said increasing salaries is not enough, because California, aka the state that pays their teachers some of the highest salaries in the country, are still experiencing this teacher shortage. I mean, obviously the cost of living in California is astronomical. Mm-hmm. But if you are making $80,000 as a teacher and you are still exiting stage left, that means it's not just the money. Like, yes, people need a significant increase in their pay and they need to feel appreciated. They need to feel like they know things. They need to feel like they are trusted as the experts of their classroom to do what is best mm-hmm. for their kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think I mean, if you know me outside of this podcast, and if I've ever talked to you in speaking in general about like what I'm truly passionate about, this conversation is like literally lighting a fire under me, because like, it's easy to say, oh yeah, our teachers are happy. They experience joy, but like, what does that look like? What does that sound like? What does that feel like? And quite honestly, it's different for every school, for every leader. And it's like, your employees are coming to you because they trust that they are going to be able to learn, grow, develop, not only themselves, but their kids. And it's like, if you're you by you not allowing your teachers to flourish, it doesn't make teachers trust you. Like, it doesn't, it's that trust isn't going to be reciprocated if you're controlling every little minute thing that they're doing. And right. So honestly, I don't coach core members right at this point in time. However, I know quite a bit about what they're experiencing and what they're going through. So like, you know, I hate to be like this, but like, teachers are putting the spotlight on leaders and those in our government officials. It's like, so what y'all gonna do?
Yeah.
What you gonna do?
Damn!
We haven't done an exit ticket in a while, but I want people, particularly people who are teaching still, to consider, who do you need to bring to the table to have this conversation with? How do you have this conversation with your school leaders to say like, hey, this ain't it. And I want to support by doing X, Y, Z. When I told my principal something, she's like, cool, now you're responsible for doing it. I'm like, dang girl, I ain't even meaning like that. Now I gotta do something else. But
she saw the leader in you.
And you need to be ready. Because if you are noticing something, principals sometimes don't have the mental capacity to plan something that is not already a part of their scope of work. So if you and another teacher friend say, hey, we actually want to start a sunshine committee for our school. We want to figure out how to get people donuts, or we want to figure out how to have a teacher celebration on a Friday and go out to happy hour together. We want to figure out how to do this because our teachers deserve that. Figure out who you can tap in to support you, create your plan, go to your school leader with your plan. What's the worst that they can say? The worst they can say is no, but you won't know until you ask. So that is my exit ticket for today. And for people who support teachers, consider, how can you lean in to support not just your teachers or not just your core members, mm-hmm. but the other teachers who you are not directly responsible for.
Ooh, you giving me more work, Taylor?
I am. It's a part of me, because once I have core members out of school, I then think that whole school is now my responsibility. It might be problematic, but when the principal or the school leader comes to me and say, hey, I would like to actually do this, I'm like, bet, how can I help?
Yep.
It might not be me directly that's giving the resource, but I'm going to find somebody to connect you with. Mm-hmm. That's the least I can do for y'all. I hope you have enjoyed this conversation about the Great Resignation / Great Recession. If you would like to share with us your ideas or the things that you are going to try to implement in your school or in your classroom, feel free to reach out to us via email, or feel free to reach out to us via Instagram, which is at @entangled_podcast on the Instagram. We would love to see what y'all are doing and how you're taking care of yourselves and your mm-hmm. kids and the other people in your village. So
yep. If you want to share your experiences too and want to chime in on that conversation, you can do the same thing, DM us or shoot us an email at entangled@teachforamerica.org.
Yeah, look at us getting all the handles right.
Yes.
Growth. Yes. #growth. Okay, y'all. It's been a pleasure. We will see y'all talk to y'all next time. Go forth, conquer. See you later.
Enjoy your holiday break.
I killed it, Taylor.
Bye, y'all.